Hannah LaFigura, hot topic, and we may have to use that as the as the backdrop for Charlie's visits. Been a while since we've had that kind of a series. Satish's visits on this were amazing. For however long, 5-6 years easily, and he would just deliver the unvarnished truth with any topic that I would ask, and these are both the two parallel track topics that Charlie addresses in that piece, the ADW structure and the robotics, and having real negative impact. I mentioned Satish. Let me, I hear Steve in the background. Steve Askin is going to join us momentarily. And I do want to read Satish's text that he wanted me to pass along regarding majestic perfection. And he said, I've just heard myself, obviously very sad to hear the news. He was one of my favorite horses that I've owned and one of the fastest. He gave me great pleasure and our family great pleasure. Thanks to everyone for their kind thoughts about majestic perfection. So one of the sport's best owners and fans, Satish Sinan. Steve Askin, good morning.
Janet Jones.
Thank you. From the other day when I couldn't remember Wayne Gretzky's wife's name. Thank you.
One of my all-time favorite movies, by the way.
You love Flamingo Kid.
It really captured New York scene in the 1960s of a kid from Brighton Beach getting a job at a cabana. For all these snotty, rich Long Islanders. And great, great movie. Great characters.
Great
acting. Very, very good movie. Anybody who hasn't seen it, I look for it. I can't find it anywhere. It's one of those movies that,
that isn't really, really. It's not available on demand and stuff.
I looked on demand, no.
Huh.
Everything coming. Flamingo Road. Nothing. But no Flamingo Kid.
Richard Crenna, tremendous.
It's a great. It's such a great coming of age movie where.
Yeah.
Matt Dillon is so naive that he thinks that Richard Crenna, thinks he's this whiz kid and wants to bring him in and start selling. Mercedes. I forgot. I can't remember what.
Porsche, Lamborghinis and yeah.
He gives up everything. He's not going back to school. He has fights with his father, who's great, by the way. It was Hector Elizondo. And then he finds out that he wants to give him a job as a stock boy. And he comes to the realization of what life is all about. And then the whole thing with the. With the big gin rummy games. Oh, it's just a great movie.
Anybody can find it,
definitely watch it. But anyway, Janet Jones is in that movie, and she sort of plays his love, an older, sort of a slightly older love interest in there, but she was quite good. This was before she was Mrs. Gretzky.
Well, there's you mentioned Hector Elizondo. You've got Jessica Walter.
Jessica Walter was so good as a typical Long Island wife.
Yes,
some rich guy in there, and
yes, world weary.
Looking down on everybody.
This is my life being entertained by a cabana boy.
By a cabana boy, right?
And I got to tell you, I'm not a Matt Dillon fan, to be honest. But it is wonderful.
He's been in some good movies. He was in one thing, by the way, and it's another thing you cannot find anywhere. But if you love Christmas Story, Gene Shepard did something called The Great 4th of July and Other Disasters. And Matt Dillon plays this nerdy kid. It's probably his first role. And it was, if you like Christmas Story, it was so all Gene Shepard, and it was again so great, you know, growing up type of movie, and funny, very typical Gene Shepard. I thought he was great in that, and he was great in another movie called Beautiful Girls. It had a really, really good, good cast. Where you know he plays this, he was always the cool, tough guy, and now he plows snow, and again, it's a great movie. But those are three Matt Dillon movies that I thought were very good.
There's a film of his that I think is little seen as well that I remember and I enjoyed because I would go to Tulsa on business when I worked in Kansas City for Procter, and would go down to Tulsa and stay at the Camelot Hotel, which is now gone, and I can never remember if it was on Yale Ave or Harvard Ave, but there's a movie called Tex. Which is very, very, I haven't seen it in years, but was really good, where he's,
that was a book written by, was it Colleen McCullough who wrote The Thornbirds?
That sounds right.
I think that might've been her first book before The Thornbirds.
How about that? Look at you. You're unbelievable.
I believe so. Yeah, it was very, very. I mean, I remember it was very, very heartwarming. And
1982, and I'm just pulling it up. Based on. Wow, Emilio Estevez was in it, and I do not remember. Meg Tilly was in it, and I don't remember that. I'm gonna have to pull Tex out and see it again. It's been a long time, but I was in Kansas City starting in 84, and I just remember, you know, there's a lot of action. A lot of it takes place in Tulsa, and screenplay. It was an S.E. Hinton novel.
Oh, okay.
S.E. Hinton.
I knew it was a novel. I just couldn't remember who wrote it.
Well, and that's The Outsiders, right? The Hinton.
Yeah, right. Actually, you know what movie I'm thinking of? I think I'm thinking of Tim, which who I think was a, that might have been Colleen McCullough's. It's about this sort of like retarded kid.
They don't say that anymore, Steve.
Mel Gibson. I think it might have been like the first girl.
Oh, wow. Wow. Now that you say that, and you're right, Tim.
I think that was Colleen McCullough's
correct.
First book, Tim.
Look at you. Look at you. Yeah. Tim is right.
I'm confusing Tim with Tess.
Tim is correct. 1979. And then the Thornbirds 5 years later, 4 years later. Yep. Good job.
Yeah. Well, listen, I got it wrong in the beginning, but I recovered.
Shift gears. And actually that was a good interlude to, you know, to kind of, get me back focused in on the racing action. We got the Holy Bull to talk about, Steve, and the Lewis. And I do want you to, flesh out both of those races and maybe even a little Swale. But first, some thoughts about Caddo River and maybe one or two of the maidens that were so impressive over the weekend.
Well, I had, my first dozen, I had Caddo River ranked number 12. Because I did like what I saw. I just want, you want to see them stretch out, before you get too excited. Hard to tell from the pedigree. It was a good pedigree, but you just want to see because he was so fast. Because in his early races, in the sprint races, he was going 44, 45, and he was hanging around. I'm saying, a horse like that, normally they go that fast, they're going to tire. And he kept going. So I was really curious to see what he did. And then when he had gone to Churchill Downs and just blew everybody away by 9 lengths, to see him do it again, I thought was very, very impressive. And I tell you, Brett Cox, I mean, he's just like all over the place now. He hasn't even sent out the Derby favorite yet. But if you start, if you look at his horse's pedigree, okay, he reminds me so much in the way he runs of a horse that can carry, that is fast. I don't mean a horse that can go out there and go 48 and 49 and steal a race. I mean a horse that can go out there in fast fractions and keep going. And I don't mean keep going a mile or a mile and an eighth, but a mile and a quarter, carry that kind of speed. And the one horse I think of that can do that, that did do that, was this horse's sire, Heartspun. Heartspun in the Derby, you know, a lot of people say, you know, Heartspun, is he a mile and a quarter horse? He went out there in the Derby in 46-1. That track was not incredibly fast that day. He went out there 46-1, and he went second to Street Sense, and Street Sense only beat him because he got the dream trip where he saved every inch of ground and every hole opened up for him, and he came through on the inside and swung out but Heartspun finished well. Heartspun in that race finished 6 lengths ahead of Curlin in third. So, I mean, Heartspun ran an incredible race. You have to go 46-1, and this horse reminds me so much of that, that he just keeps going. So watching this race, when I saw him go a half mile in 47 and three quarters in 112-2, I said, this is like walking for this horse. It was like, you might as well put him in slow motion and just waiting to see what was going to happen when they stepped on the gas. And as soon as he did, I mean, he was just gone. He just has great cruising speed. Like I said, he carries it a distance of ground. He's a beautiful striding horse. Showed that he's very, very athletic. Now, again, you know, it wasn't the strongest field. The horse that he beat, Cowan, was coming off a very, very close, very good second to Senor Buscador in the Springboard Mile. Now, granted, Cowan did not have the best of trips. He had to check really sharply going into the first turn to avoid clipping heels from a horse that came out in front of him. So he was well beaten, but he finished 7.5 lengths ahead of the third horse. So with all things considered, this is a horse I don't want to mess with right now. Again, I don't know how far he's going to carry his speed, but at these kind of distances, mile and 16th, mile and eighth, I don't want to mess with this horse.
No, it was impressive, and there's plenty to like. There's no doubt.
Yeah, and as far as the maiden races, well, you know, prevalence. The thing that cracks me up, by the way, was I had to listen to Brandon Walsh to see what he had to say about him. And the thing that I love about Brandon Walsh, he's so understated.
Yes.
And I was listening to him talking about this horse, and three times in his conversation with you, he called him a nice horse. And I was saying, if that's a nice horse, then what the heck is a very, very good-looking horse? I mean, this horse looked... I don't think anybody really expected this. I mean, for him to... And that was a good, you know, it was a good maiden field. But the ease in which he did it, I mean, it was very, very impressive. Now, the main thing with him, and again, he did everything the right way. You couldn't find any flaws in him at all, the way he won it. But you're going to want to run him in the Derby with 3 lifetime starts when you've got essential quality, and I'm talking about Brandon Walsh, I'm talking about Godolphin. When you got right. Essential quality and you've got Proxy, who looks like he's developing into a Derby horse, do you really want to rush this horse? Because I can't see them getting more than 3 starts into him. And, you know, listen, the only horse that's won the Derby with 3 starts that didn't race at 2 was Justify. And, you know, Justify obviously was a potential superstar. And, you know, they rushed him to get to the Derby, and he didn't make it past the Belmont. So, you know, it's Godolphin, and I know they want to win a Derby, and we'll see what happens with Essential Quality. But if Essential Quality comes back at 3, as good as he was at 2, and Proxy keeps developing, you know, I'm thinking, I don't know, I wouldn't rush this horse. Not with 3 starts. I know times have changed, and You can't look at things the way you used to. But still, three starts is three starts. And it's just, to me, it's just not enough to be ready for the Derby unless you're a Justify. And,
well, and
the crop is as bad as it was for Justify's crop. You know, if this turns out to be a really, really good crop of horses, I mean, Justify did not, you know, beat. He had, you know, Good Magic. It was basically the one horse, you know, that was anywhere close to him in talent. But, you know, it wasn't the best crop. And a lot of times that happens when Triple Crown winners. A lot of times Triple Crown winners don't win the Triple Crown when they're good crops. Once in a while you get them too, but, you know, Seattle Slough wasn't the greatest crop. You know, Secretariat was a terrific crop, and obviously Affirmed was. But you go back to some of the other horses, Count Fleet, Whirlaway, and, you know, all those horses. You never heard of the horses that they beat. So that's for prevalence. And then the other horse, the great one, that's a funny thing is that last week, I watched that race. And I said, I'm gonna reserve judgment on this horse only because watching the race, four horse field, one of the horses did not belong, so that made it a three horse field. One of the horses, Affable, stumbled badly at the start, so that compromised him. And then the big favorite in the race with Fenway, that everybody had been talking about, you know, they're talking about him and they're talking about the other, you know, unraced Baffert horse, Bezos, who somehow winds up in the starting future wager field without ever having run. But everybody was talking about Fenway. In fact, the clockers told Dennis O'Neill before that race that he's running for second. So that's how impressed the clockers were with Fenway. And he just ran into a brick wall. I mean, you know, the track was pretty dead. And they ran very fast early. But by the 5/16th pole, Fenway just started going backwards. He wound up getting beat like 30 lengths. So I'm looking at the race. I'm saying, all right, the horse won by 14. But basically from the quarter pole, I'll say the quarter pole home, he was in a walkover. And there was nobody running behind him at all.
True.
So I said, reserve judgment on this horse. And then I started watching the race over again, studying the race more, and I started looking at him. I watched his mechanics and watched him gallop out literally an eighth of a mile ahead of the runner-up, Affable, who, you know, like I said, he stumbled badly in the start, but he had a good trip, and he's supposed to be a really good horse. He was very highly touted last time he ran. This horse literally galloped out an eighth of a mile ahead of Affable, and he just did it like nothing. So, you know, again, I started looking at his pedigree, and I mean, it's a good pedigree. He's got stamina in there. He's got a mile speed from El Corridor. And I watched the race again, and I started looking. I said, you know, they put the blinkers on this horse. I said, let me look more into him. So I contacted Dennis O'Neill, who picked him out. And I contacted Eric Johnson, who's a star hockey player, a defenseman for the Colorado Avalanche, if anybody doesn't know, who's really, really into racing. And I've known him for several years. And so I contacted him. Dennis told me, the story behind this horse. He was a big, gangly horse. And if you look at it, it looks as if he sold for $185,000, because that's the way it was in Equineline. But it's not the case. He RNA'd for $195,000. And Dennis had fallen in love with him. And Niall Brennan had loved the horse. And so he was going to go look at him, maybe buy him privately. So they were bidding people were offering $150,000, $160,000 for the horse. And they really didn't want to go much higher. So Dennis contacted Eric and sent him photos of the horse and sent him a video of the horse. And Eric fell in love with him. And he said, yeah, we have to go higher than we wanted to spend because, people are offering $150,000, $160,000. And Eric Johnson told him, he said, just go back there right now and get that horse bought. And he went out there and he offered $185,000 for him, and it actually was a private purchase. And he was very immature, and he told Eric Johnson, he said, look, this horse was not going to be a two-year-old. So just chill out, and we'll wait for him to turn three. And he just matured, and he's just getting better. And I think he's legit. I think he's a serious horse. So I'm going to definitely rank him this week. I'm definitely going to put him back in the ranks.
Well, aside from those, I mean, there were some other maiden and allowance winners, but we'll save those for when they jump into competition and into stakes opportunities. Let's look, Steve, because we got about 15. I got to get to Chris Griffin too at the bottom of the hour. So let's dive in and start in Florida. Then we'll move out west. Talk about the Holy Bull, and there's actually some participants here that are some fresh faces.
Yeah, this is it's a very unusual race. If you want to be serious about the quality of the race and what kind of a race it is, it's basically an allowance field. I mean, you got a couple of horses from the Mucho Macho Man, which really didn't come up that strong a race. So it's basically the favorites in this race are going to be horses coming out of a maiden race. So it's essentially almost a non-winner's a one other than. However, I think several of these horses coming out of maiden races, somebody's going to be a legitimate Derby horse in here, because there are some really, really good horses in here. In fact, one of them, Prime Factor, I had ranked, and I never, ever rank a horse coming out of a maiden race, you know, one start out of a maiden sprint, and rank him in the top 12. I did with Prime Factor because of all the races this week. You know, I dropped him to knocking on the door and said, look, let's wait a week and see what he does. But here's a horse that was very, very, I was incredibly impressed with this horse, just so much for the fact that I ranked him. So I can't wait to see how good this horse is. Another horse I mentioned, and I was going to rank, was Pletcher's first-timer amount. And the reason I didn't rank him is that he wound up with a 9.5 thoroughgraph number, which I thought was not quite as fast as I thought it would be. But horses do improve. I mean, if you look at the California race, you know, the Rob Lewis, listen, Medina Spirit debuted with a 9.5, and then ran a 3.25 in the Sham. And the other horse that I had ranked, I actually ranked two maidens. The first one, two maiden winners. The other one, Roman Centurion, who I'd mentioned, is also in the Bob Lewis. And his first start was a 13, and when he broke his maiden, he ran a 6. So horses do improve. So it's possible that amount could go from a 9.5 to a 4 or a 3, something like that in this race. Horses make big jumps now, and if he does, he's going to be right there. But from a visual standpoint, I found him very, very impressive. So, you know, it could be that. I mean, these could definitely wind up as the two favorites coming out of maiden races. But there's other good horses in here. The horse on the rail, Herophiles, however you pronounce it. You know, listen, he gets John Velasquez in here. He's got the rail going two turns. And I don't know what he beat. He broke his maiden. Visually, he was impressive. It was a Gulfstream West. I really don't know any of the horses that he beat in there. However, I have to say that he is an absolutely stunning horse. I mean, he's just beautifully made. Looks like a pure distance horse. And he has, without a doubt, the most gorgeous head I've seen this year. I mean, it's just a beautiful, chiseled head. Very alert. I mean, looks like a good horse. A lot of people aren't going to be familiar with his pedigree, but he's bred to go long. There's no distance question there at all. So
Joe Applebaum. Bred by Joe Applebaum. Joe Applebaum bred him.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Yeah. Off the hook.
Yeah. I love the name. I always love that name, Off the Hook. It's a great name. But we'll see how good he is. I think he owns part of them too, I believe,
yeah.
Right?
Yep, he's in with this OGMA. I'll find out from Joe about the OGMA investment, who that group is. It's a very unusual, social inclusion, was a bit of a mercurial type, you'll recall, and out of a horse chestnut mare, Gran Pashita. It's a very interesting pedigree.
Yeah, I like horse chestnut. You don't see him too often. But he's a good horse. He was a tremendous racehorse, and he's a good sire. There aren't many of them, but when you do see one, you got to, as a broodmare sire, but when you see his name in there, you have to pay attention to it. And I think Gustavo Delgado is a very good trainer.
Yes, he is.
You give him a good horse, and I think he's going to do a really good job with it. He's proven he's had good horses before. And, and some of these horses you just don't know about. The horse is stretching out. Willie Boy and, Pepito is coming, off the Mucho Macho Man. Again, I don't know how good. A lot of people thought Mutasa Beck was going to run in here. And Pletcher, went with Prime Factor.
Well, and if you didn't hear Todd the other morning, Mutasa Beck's on the shelf. He's had a setback.
Oh, he is? Oh, okay.
Yeah, and Todd poured a bucket of cold water on my head after I had included him in my future wager bets on Saturday.
Well, I got to tell you, that's two horses now. Todd Bill Matsworth, Olympiad, is in the future wager on the shelf. Obviously, Churchill Downs just puts horses in there, and they don't check with the trainers to see.
No, they do. Darren,
well,
and
Olympiad,
Kevin.
Olympiad, he's been on the shelf. He had worked last week, and he obviously got hurt in the race. But they obviously didn't check. If they did check, they wouldn't have put both these horses on there. If you do check and you do your due diligence, and the trainer says he's on a shelf, then why would you put him in the future wager?
Well,
so obviously they didn't check with the trainers, otherwise they wouldn't have put him in. That's the only way I can look at it. But they put in a horse that's never run before. I'm just confused on how to go about.
It gets announced.
I'm not saying it's easy. It gets announced. To find the 23 horses. And it's very difficult to have to check with 23 trainers, but you are dealing with people's money, and there are people that, like yourself, who bet Mutasa Beck, and I'm sure there are plenty of people who bet Olympiad for nothing. They just threw their money away. So,
well, they checked. They don't forget. They announced the thing days in advance. They announced it Tuesday. It's not like they put these out there on Friday. When they made the list and released the press on it. Those horses were active. Darren and company and the group absolutely is in contact. I mean, they were led to believe that Bissos was going to show up over the weekend to run, and then ended up Wednesday when they took entries. Baffert wasn't ready to start him. So there's a lot of moving parts to that equation.
Yeah, I mean, in the case of Olympiad. I checked with Mott like immediately after this came out. He said he was on the shelf. So I don't know. Listen, it's whatever it is. I understand that it's not easy doing it. It's a difficult job, but these things happen. I asked Baffert about Bezos, how Churchill found out about this horse to put him on there. He said he never spoke to anybody at Churchill. So. From what I hear, the word came from Las Vegas that a lot of money was put on this horse in Las Vegas. So maybe that's where they got it from. But it's just strange to have this, because it's never happened before, to put a horse that hadn't run. I moved him up to two. He had a great work. Two horses that he beat. He had run twice against Cattle River in sprint races and finished right behind them. And when he broke his maiden last out, the horse that finished second came back and won over the weekend. And the horse that finished fourth in that same race, Dynamic One, finished second to him. He came back and finished fourth, got beat two lengths, but it had an absolutely horrendous trip. And he had 8 million excuses that had even nothing to do with the race itself. But I think he's a very, very good horse. Anyway, so I moved Greatest Honor up to number two, because I also like the fact that Sugar had told me that he wanted to run him in a mile and eighth, and he was going to run him in the Withers. Well, he shows up here, so what? So what else is new? So I'm curious to see how he. I'm curious to see how he does here. You know, going at the shorter distance on a speed favoring track, which is something that Sugar had originally said that he didn't want to do, but obviously for some reason he changed his mind. He put him in here, and it's a good spot. We'll see how good he is. And then you come to one of the proven horses in the race, Sitting on Go, who looked like he was going to be a terrific horse. You know, when he won the Iroquois, beating Midnight Bourbon, he just blew by him in the stretch and just drew off. Looked like it was going to be something. And he ran, you know, very disappointing race in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And then he came back in the Kentucky Jockey Club, and he was down on the rail the whole way and just never fired in the stretch. So I asked what the story is with him. And they said they don't know. He just didn't run well. But he's been working lights out. He's turned in some really, really strong works. So maybe if he makes a positive transition from two to three, he's got the experience on these horses in here. And we'll see if he can improve. If he runs back to his works, maybe he didn't like being on the inside in his last start. I don't know. I don't know. But his last two races were very disappointing. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him rebound in this race. So I mean, I find it a very interesting field. I think somebody's going to emerge. I would say at least two horses will emerge here as really serious Derby horses.
That'd be great.
Maybe even three. You know, I mean, we'll see. We'll see how these horses run. We'll see how good Prime Factor is. We'll see how good Amount is. You know, like I said. You know, Pletch is going with two, you know, unproven horses coming out of maiden races, and they both could be extraordinary horses. And you got to run them now. You have to run them now because they need racing. They've only run once.
Exactly.
If you want to get four races into a horse, which I always look at as the bare minimum, you know, four. I remember it used to be four horses never won the Derby. You had to go back like 100 years to find the horses that won the Derby with four starts. So if you're going to want to get to the Derby with four starts, you got to run them here. You have to. You can't. So that's why horses that are breaking their maidens now, first time out, going six furlongs, I can't consider them Derby horses because they're not going to be able to get more than three starts in.
No, it's a little late.
So
in the game.
I just find it a very fascinating race, and we'll see what kind of form the Mucho Macho is. We'll see how awesome Jerry runs, but I mean, listen, Mucho Macho was a good time. They ran 35-4. Well, we'll see. This is the sorting out period. You know, we don't know how good these horses are. Some of them are going to surprise you, run better than you think they are, like a Prevalence. Others who you think are going to be superstars, you know, they face winners for the first time, and they're not the same horse. And you find out that, you know, they're just these one-shot wonders that come out running, but they're not really Derby horses. And that's what we're going to find out.
You know, Steve, before we talk about the Lewis, because we got to move along, I'm surprised you didn't have anything to say at all about Tarantino and, you know, here making a dirt debut. And, you know, from a pedigree standpoint, you know, that without delay, I know she was the dam of the JY, who was a nice horse. And, you know, they certainly from a route going side of the coin has every reason to, you know, to enjoy distance, and I'm very curious about him.
I just overlooked him. You can't. He's coming. You know, like I said, he's coming off three turf starts, and how good he is, we have no idea, but. Listen, you know, the ownership of the SF Racing, Starlight, you know, Mattingly Stable, they don't have any horses anyway. So, you know, it'll be good to see them have a good horse. You know,
exactly.
You never see them around anywhere.
Let's turn to the Santa Anita field and the Bob Lewis. And here's the next step, mile and a 16th. and San Felipe to follow, and Santa Anita Derby, and, you know, two from O'Neill, two from Baffert, two from Sheriffs, plus potentially emergent. You mentioned Roman Centurion earlier, and here he is, Empire Maker, Colt out of a Bernardini mare, Don Alberto bred, and they're partnered up with Qatar Racing in here. Ron Bauer makes a return to the action, three-year-old debut. Looking forward to his return. This really came up kind of fun.
It really did. I mean, this is a very, you know, it's not a big field, but it's a very deep field. Anybody can win this race. It's hard to handicap it because the track's going to be a mess. It's going to be an absolute quagmire out there. I mean, so much so that, you know, they took the races off the turf already. They canceled racing on Friday. So, I mean, they're expecting this crazy monsoon, you know, coming through there.
Right now, tonight, tomorrow.
This is like a wall of water. They've already had mudslides in California, you know, damaging homes. It's going to be a real mess. And I tell you one thing about California, obviously in, you know, L.A. area, you know, they say it never rains in California. Well, you know, maybe for 10 months out of the year or so. But for the 2 months now, December, January, February or so, 3 months, when it rains there, it pours. It's, you know, you get these incredible mudslides, and it could be really, really nasty. And it's supposed to be this crazy storm coming in from the Pacific. So I don't know. I don't know who's going to handle a slop and who's not going to handle a slop. But, you know, everybody's going. And again, you got to run these horses. What are you going to do? You're going to wait for March to run to San Felipe, or are you going to ship out of town? You know, with all, you know, with everything going on right now, you really don't want to ship out, so you have to run. You know, they don't handle a slop. At least you get a race in them. You bring them, but then you can bring them back into San Felipe. But you know, listen, you know, Medina Spirit. He should run well here. I loved his race in the Sham against Life is Good. I remember he finished 13 lengths ahead of Parnelli. Parnelli's a horse that really baffles me in a way. You know, he had gotten beaten photos by Hot Rod Charlie and Spielberg, who were the two most accomplished horses in here. He got beat in the neck both times to those horses. Then he comes back and he romps in a maiden race going a mile. I said, all right, I'm going to put this horse in my top 12. I love his pedigree. He's by a quality road out of a Bernardini mare. I love the way he runs. I love everything about him. And then he goes in the Sham, and you know he's running five, six, seven lengths off the pace, and he does no running. So I reached out to Sheriffs. I said, you know, what's the story with him? Well, you know, John gave me like three separate cryptic answers, and he asked me to figure it out. Well, I can't figure it out. So only John knows why he ran poorly. But he made it into a quiz show for me, and I have no idea what he's talking about. I even asked him. I said, "What are you saying? I mean, I have no idea what you're talking about." You know, and I'm trying to guess what he's referring to. And he said, and he says, you know, he sent me a text. He says, "You're brilliant. You can figure it out." I said, "I'm not brilliant because I can't figure it out." So, anybody out there, if you want to take a shot at Parnelli for some strange, obscure reason that something weird happened in his last start, we'll see. You know, he switched jockeys. He's got Rispoli up, but again, I'm still baffled by him, and I still don't know any more about him than I did before, other than there might be a reason, or at least John Sheriffs thinks that there was a reason why he didn't run as well. But I'm sorry, folks. I couldn't figure out his little cryptic text. But, you know, I love John, and that's sometimes that's what you get. But and as far as, you know, Doug's horses, again, the only reason I have questions about them, only because I'm not quite sure if they're mile and a quarter horses. They could very well be mile and a quarter horses. I just don't know. I just don't know how far they want to go. I know, you know, Wipe the Slate's got a lot of speed in the female family. And, you know, he's by Nyquist, and the Nyquists are runners, obviously. They're all over the place. Now, Nyquist did run in the slop. Remember in the Preakness, he didn't, you know, that was his first time he ever lost. So, but that could mean absolutely nothing because that team probably was going the wrong direction at that point anyway. The other horse we mentioned earlier, Roman Centurion, I was really impressed with his last start. I thought he ran a tremendous race. He just made a big, big move on a turn and just, you know, blew his field away, stretching out from 6.5 to a mile and a 16th. And, you know, what is it, by Empire Maker? He's out of a Bernardini mare. The whole pedigree is strong. Simon Callahan has him. And again, I thought so much of him that I ranked him in the top 12. And again, it's something I never do, but that's how impressed I was. So again, we'll see if he can handle a slop. Obviously, Empire Maker could run in the slop. Bernardini can handle an off track, so no reason why he shouldn't. You know, and then we come to Rombauer.
Hold on one sec.
This is a horse, Steve, by the way. What?
Pause for a second. It should be noted. People should be aware. He ran on Lasix in that maiden win when he stretched out, and he's got to come off of it, of course, for this. So he's the only person.
I never know what to make of it. I really don't. Because you're
FYI.
Senor Buscador, you know, one without Lasix, he's going to have to come off it. You just don't know. I can't not like
it. No, I know. I understand.
He's coming off of Lasix.
I want people to be aware. And because I'll tell you something that's gone on. I made reference to it earlier this morning. And that is that we're only getting, you know, bits and pieces about, you know, these older horses, particularly that are coming off Lasix to participate in stakes. Apparently, there were plenty that bled down in South Florida on that stakes card coming out. And it's clear that we're not
going to. Sure, it's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, it's also clear we're not going to get the information publicized.
Which ones are going to be affected by it and which ones are not going to be affected by
Correct.
It. Correct. So rather than guess, I'm just going to look at it and say, look, you know,
you just got to go on faith.
Them up and it's gonna, and right. It's gonna, not going to run as well. Nothing I could do about it.
I understand.
You can only go by what's in front of you.
No, that I understand, and you know, some of the form reversals, you know, or collapses are absolutely, you know, can be attributed on that, and we're not going to know, and there isn't a system in place to inform players, which is completely unfair. But how are we going to get that?
Well,
addressed?
You know what? A lot of trainers, I think they're looking at it now, saying, you know what? Let me get a win in this horse, and then I'll worry about it afterwards.
Yep, understood.
And hope he comes off. But, you know, they run on Lasix when they don't have to run on Lasix, but they decide to run on because they want to give the horse a shot to win, and then maybe just start from scratch and hope that he can run well without it. So sometimes it's going to work. Sometimes it's not going to work. So all we can do is just wait and see. It's not going to surprise me either way. If a horse is coming off of Lasix and runs just as good as he did with Lasix, it's not going to surprise me. If he comes off of Lasix and he runs terribly coming off a win, that's not going to surprise me.
Well, you're not going to know.
You know that's racing. That's the way we have to deal with it now.
Well, it doesn't make for
good handicapping. Let's put it that way.
Well, forget the handicapping. There's actually people betting money.
That's handicapping.
Well, no, handicapping is handicapping.
Well, yeah,
I'm talking about
handicapping and betting.
There you go.
You just don't know.
I got you.
You know, you're putting your money on a question mark.
All right, fill out some more thoughts on this group.
So, you know, a horse like Rombauer, who you know, I think he surprised everybody with his, you know, as good a race as he ran in the American Pharoah. And he finished
turf
well
to dirt.
Of Spielberg in that race. And, you know, he was a big price in the Breeders' Cup. And he was way far back. But, again, it was a pace that was set up for him. And he closed well enough. He finished fifth in the race, which is good. But if you watch his races, even in the American Pharoah, he had every shot in that race to catch get or number. And he's a solid closer, but the thing I want to see with him, I want to see a little bit more acceleration. I want to see a little bit more punch in that last eighth of a mile, you know, just to generate a little bit more energy. He closes steady and steady, But if he's going to be a Series Derby horse, I just want to see a little bit more energy, a little more acceleration in that last eighth of a mile. And so, we'll see how he makes the transition from 2 to 3 in here, and we'll see, you know, see if he's gotten better. You know, he's got Mike Smith back up again. It's a tough race to handicap. You got to deal with the slop. You got to deal with, horses coming, a horse like Roman Centurion was coming off a maiden race and, coming off of Lasix. Parnelli, who's coming off an inexplicable, dull race. And add to that just track conditions. We just don't know what we're going to get here. We really don't. It's a very hard race to handicap because of all those things.
I'll tell you one thing.
But it is intriguing. I'm curious to see what happens.
I do have to mention that there is a story here that I would love to pursue, and we'll reach out maybe to the Fradkins through Michael McCarthy. This dam, a cowboy cow mare named Cashmere, who was unraced, she has had 4 foals, Dave. She started with a lucky pulpit colt named Kono, who's made $160,000, won 3 times. She then delivered a colt by the name of Treasure Trove, now a gelding, by Tapazar, that's made $183,000. Then she got Fly Times, a filly by Mr. Speaker, who's won 2 times. And then Rombauer. I don't see anything for 19, and I hope she's still producing, because she has gotten 4 winners with, obviously Twirling Candy is arguably the nicest of the stallions that the Fradkins have used. But what a nice broodmare this turned into, an unraced cowboy cow that's produced 4 winners of over close to 600,000.
Well, you got to remember, Cowboy Cow was himself a very well-bred horse by Giant's Causeway out of a Seeking the Gold Mare. If you look at this horse's tail female family, he's got names that you don't see very often, even though they're very talented horses. You got a horse like a Fleet, who is very, very fast horse. He came along in that incredible 1987 3-year-old crop with Ali Sheba and Bet Twice and Lost Code and all those really good Java Gold and all these really good horses. And then you got a horse like Vigors, who was, a big long striding gray horse. It was a 1.25 mile horse. It was a tremendous closer. So got a little bit of everything in here.
That dam was a Jersey-bred Social Conduct.
Oh, really?
Bill Purdy.
Okay.
Yep. There's a lot going. There's a lot of fun things in here. This is a wait till Sid. I hope this horse does something, so Sid and I can talk. I could let Sid loose on this pedigree, because it Knightly Manor and Nail and Jamaica Inn. You got to be kidding. This is like the most obscure set of female family stallions you'll ever see.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, you just never see names like that.
No.
I mean, how often do you see a Fleet and Vigors and Knightly Manor in a horse's a female family like that?
No. Jamaica Inn?
You can make a case for all of them. They're all good horses. But you just don't see names like that.
Wow, there's some crazy things going on here. All right, Rombauer, this is going to be fun. And we talked to Doug O'Neill the other morning about Hot Rod Charlie and Wipe the Slate, and Doug seems well positioned.
Yeah, he's got three legitimate horses right now. Obviously he's got 2 horses in here. We'll see if they both run well. Wipe the Slate, from a visual standpoint, looked very impressive last time, and he was coming off a 2nd behind Life is Good, so that certainly boosted that horse. But he showed, he showed all the tools. We'll see how good he is. But, coming off a maiden race and facing not only winners, but facing, graded stakes horses in here. So we'll see how good he is, and we'll see if Hot Rod Charlie can take one more step forward. If he does, then, he's got to be, he's got, got to be ranked if he runs well here. But, you know, I watched his maiden race. It was a game race or so. You know, he just got up to win by a neck. He goes over 94-1 in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. You say, well, you know, first of all, what's he doing in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile? Coleman coming off a neck maiden win. You look at the race he ran. I mean, he ran a tremendous race.
Yep.
Again, a little bit of a question with the pedigree as far as mile and a quarter, but in this day and age, you can never say never.
Anything else, Steve? Anybody else you want to slip in?
Just one quickly. The 7th at Gulfstream tomorrow is the mile 16th maiden grass stake. Yes. There are three horses in there that look like them and said, why are they on grass? They have incredible dirt, unbelievable dirt pedigrees. You got this, Bill Mott's got a horse by Street Sense named Jolly, and who worked 47.3 on the dirt. And he puts him on the grass. And Pletcher has got the quality road in there, Avenue, for Lepenta's and his group. And he's been working well, quality road. And then Chad Brown's got this horse, Ariston, who's by Flatter. And if you go through all the pedigree, I don't mean just the sire. I mean, damn, everything. It's all dirt. And all three of these horses are making their debut on the grass. So the only thing I can think of is that, you know, Lamont, I can understand, and Chad Brown, in some ways, you can understand they like grass. But sometimes you just need a race. Sometimes you got a horse, and if you can't find a race for him, you don't want to sprint him. These are all distance horses. You need they want a two-turn race for him. You got to get a race in him. I think these three horses are in here strictly because they need a race and not because it's grass. And if one of these horses wins this race, you watch next time out. I almost guarantee you can see him on the dirt.
Did you say tomorrow or Saturday?
I'm sorry. I meant Saturday. I keep saying it. Yeah, I meant Saturday. I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm trying to pull it up.
I get my gaze confused.
That's all right.
That's what happens when you never go out.
Exactly. All right, I'll pull that up.
Take a look at these horses. We're all first-time starters. And take a look at their pedigrees. Find me grass anywhere in these pedigrees. And there's third pedigrees in here.
I got it. Seventh race. All right, I'll do it. Steve,
Mott worked his horse on the grass, sure. Yeah, he worked there. But he worked him on the dirt in 47-3.
Yeah, this is interesting.
You look at this horse's pedigree, you know, Street Sense colt, all dirt. But, I'll say it again. I think they're in here only because they need a race.
Nice. I'm glad you pointed out. I had printed the stakes, but I hadn't looked at the non-stake action for Gulfstream on Saturday. Seventh race.
Yeah.
Nice. Steve, let me jump.
Two that are kind of interesting, but I pointed these three out because, you know, three big name trainers in here, and horses to watch. Let's put it that way.
Exactly. Ariston for Chad, Joe Minor bred, and Jarlian for Sanders and Hirsch for Mott. Nice. Steve, let me jump. I got Chris Griffin waiting, and we're late getting out. So a big weekend. We'll look forward to recapping next week.
All right, Steve. Take care.
Steve Askin, everybody, secretariat.com, and Derby Dozen. Let's get Chris Griffin in here because we're inching closer on a daily basis to Sunday. Everybody's worried about the Derby preps. Forget those. You got the Ladies Classic and the Connolly and the Jersey Lily and the Texas Mile. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I like all those races too. But yeah, we're fired up about Houston Racing Festival, no question. It's going to be a really exciting weekend. Very busy weekend, but we're very excited.
Well, and why don't we quickly, I mean, we're going to look at Thursday, today's sequence, and you and I'll handicap, but let me get some early opinions and just some thoughts as you've gone through these fields for Sunday.
Yeah, so the Houston Ladies Classic, I don't think there's a middle ground right now on Latruska who's even money on the morning line. I think there's people that are really on board from a wagering standpoint, thinking that she's just much the best in that field, and I think that there's people completely against. So I don't think that There isn't kind of a gray area with her. I think that's pretty interesting. I think the odds will be interesting as well in there because, again, I'll talk with Nick Tamaro on Sunday when we host the simulcast show together on Sunday and just ask about the morning line. And some people felt like she deserved to be even money, and some people were like, well, I don't know, that kind of thing. But that's normal. I think it was hard to find some value in the Stoner Side Sprint. I was trying to beat Nitrous, and I just can't figure out how to do it. I think the Connolly, as Mike Makebert goes for yet another one, he's got three live shots in there. I think it's real interesting to try and handicap his runners in that race because Spooky Channel has been definitely keeping the best company in the field and has been running, you know, behind a horse like Doswell and Largent, who you saw run on the Pegasus Turf Invitational. So that's going to be a tough one. And then in the Turf Sprint, that was where I found a price, and I'm just wondering if Tiger Blood is going to be able to get back to some of his form. He seems to be coming from off the pace now, but he's been pretty short odds in the last couple of starts, and now he's 10-1 on the morning line here for the Pulse Power Turf Sprint. So at 10-1, I think he offers a ton of value. The turf rails are going to be down, so, you know, turf rails at 0 feet on Sunday. And I think it does set up for a horse like that to come from off the pace if he's changed his running style a little bit, that he can run him down through the lane. And Mike Maker's got that one at 10-1. That would be a nice start there to some of the stake sequences.
Well, in addition to the ones you mentioned, I go back to the Texas Mile, and I mentioned this early when I was going through you know, just some of the highlights. I was immediately attracted to Palazzi on the rail. Declan Carroll's going to ride for Cassie 6-1, and you know, the more I looked at it, it feels like that number, you know, might hold. I mean, maybe, you know, 5-1, 9-2, but Palazzi was very attractive to me right away when I went through this the first time. Fighting Force, you know, we had Todd on the other day. I didn't really get a chance to talk about his two runners, just that they were, you know, that he was sending horses to Sam Houston. But I thought Fighting Force and Palazzi were the two that I would key off of in the mile.
No Texas Bad Boy for you, huh? No going back to the Texas Bad Boy?
I thought it was nice that I think it's great that Scholl's running him here, and I don't blame him. You know what? You say that he's not far off. Honestly, he's certainly an exotic candidate, and stylistically, he's shown the ability to attend a pace, you know, in the win, and he, even in his debut, which was on the dirt going short, he came from off. So he is tactical, and you will get the price. Maybe it's a mistake to, you know, to ignore him. Lucarelli's got a horse that he's moving over to the turf. Now, that Bobby Brinkley that Brett Calhoun has trained, you know, up until the start earlier this month. He's run some races that, if it translates to grass, will be competitive.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you're pointing out some things that, you know, Texas Bad Boy, it'll be funny. He'll be double-digit odds again, going for 3-for-3 in his career, and he's done nothing wrong. And Bobby Brinkley, as you said, they claimed him for 62.5. So, you know, they really dove in here to take a shot, and they're coming right back in a turf race going 1 mile in the Texas Turf Mile. He's Texas bred, so I think you're going to see him probably show up in some Texas bred stakes as well as the year continues. I like the Pletcher runner, actually the other one, Win From Within, towards the outside. I really like that one a lot. I thought that was a really good effort at Gulfstream Park. And the race shape is kind of what I was trying to handicap. It's tough because last year they went so fast up front. It just really set up for Bodie Cream to sit off of the pace and just to mow him down through the lane with the turf rails down at 0 feet. It looks like there's quite a few horses that there's not as many stretching out as last year, if I'm remembering correctly. But I do think that there's going to be a pretty swift pace up front. I don't think they're going to be crawling up front. I don't think there's as much natural 5-furlong stretching out, going to go, you know, 45 for the half type thing speed. But last year they kind of ran off on the front, and it just set up for a horse like Bodie Cream and his late kick. So tactically, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see the kind of trip that Palazzi works out. I think Win From Within, from that outside post, is going to be able to kind of sit off of things and has shown speed. I think could probably come off of it too. But Texas Bad Boy, you know, I kept going back to that horse, and I've got the horse underneath, but has done nothing wrong, and I like the Post too. Kevin Scholl, got a real quick word with him as I've been catching some of the connections during the mornings, and he likes the Post. He says we're taking a shot, but he said that he likes the horse, of course, and he's just doing great. So it's an interesting one. If he beats us again and he does it at 20-1, boy, what a call we're going to have next week, huh?
Well, and I want to also, before we move off to talk about today's action, go to the Connolly for a second, because a horse that I think deserves some attention is Tenfold, following up with his turf try in the Diliberto. And if that was an audition for this spot, I think he passed it. And, you know, certainly with his, you know, mile and half exploits, mile and 3/16, when he ran and won the Pimlico Special, et cetera, the distance, the mile and a half, I think could suit him. If he runs back to that Diliberto effort, he's competitive in here. And he's going to be me 6-1 morning line on Nick's line. And I am absolutely using Tenfold Sunday.
Yeah, I think there's quite a few people that even take. He's so classic, you know. I mean, a 6-year-old, and he, like you said, maybe passed the test and wants a little bit more distance. And you get Stuart Elliott up for Steve Aspison, and it's connections that we know very well. It looks like Touch Revenge is going to be on the lead. Did you see it as the Touch Revenge is going to be alone? I think Conviction Trade's got some speed, but that was at 2 miles. And then Marzo's got some speed if you throw out the last two efforts to be up close to the pace, too. Touch Revenge can kind of get brave. I mean, this is a bigger test for Touch Revenge. But the horse can kind of escape on the front end and take him a long way. But, yeah, Tenfold's an interesting one. If you get 6-1, you gotta play it. I mean, from a class standpoint, the horse is just right there behind Improbable and Sleepy Eyes Todd, and the question just ends up being turf. And if he handled it like we all think, or you think, that he did last start out at Fairgrounds, it should set him up really nicely here for the mile and a half, no question.
The pace scenario, and there is a preponderance of horses that like to sit mid pack and come with a run. And if you're looking, I guess if you're looking for somebody else that could get into the flow, I'll tell you who could get an advantageous trip is the Indiana bred Michael Lauer and Sophie Doyle with the Strong Tide is probably the horse that's going to stalk Tut's Revenge.
Yeah, just saw Strong Tide actually galloping this morning. Just saw that horse out there this morning, and horse looks good. They all look good when there's stakes horses coming in. But, yeah, looks like the one – I don't know. How close do you – I'm looking at the running lines right now. I'm not sure. Does seem to have a stalking gear, but I'm not sure how close to Tut's Revenge this horse is going to – I could see Tut's Revenge just, you know, being fresh and going out there and opening a couple lengths and just see how far they could take them, you know. And then
no doubt.
It comes down to who's classy enough to close into it when they start to ask the question. I Spooky Channel, I kept trying to get around the horse, but the horse is one at the distance. Looks like coming out of a real solid race, 3.5 lengths back off of Largent, you know.
Yeah.
The Spooky Channel looks beatable, though. It doesn't, it's not a slam dunk. The horse does not look like a slam dunk in the race. I think 5-2 is right. Has just been keeping some real, I mean, you see Zulu Alpha in there, you see Instilled Regard, you know, you're seeing some names in the running line that some of these horses just haven't quite seen. So, you know, we'll get the distance. Le Perru is going to probably, you know, a pretty patient ride, sit back and wait. And if Touch Revenge is setting any kind of pace, it's really going to be a sprint to the finish. That's no question.
Interesting, it really is. I hadn't, you know, hadn't spent a tremendous amount of time in it, other than kind of noting what a nice race Tenfold ran in the Diliberto, you know, to get beat. And I know that he's long winded. So we'll tomorrow Nick joins me and we'll flesh it out further. Let's get to the nickel claimers. That's what everybody's excited about.
Let's do it.
We got to rifle through this. We got about 7 minutes, and
we can do it.
Today's pick six, the Space City, 50 cents and 12% takeout. Starts in the fifth race. And, boy, I went through and there wasn't any morning lines on my paper. And then when I looked at the morning lines, I was very surprised at particularly one horse that I liked. What are you doing in here?
I'm going to go with the number eight now, mind you. This angle has been working. The horse has been running and seems like running against a little bit tougher company. Went in the allowance last time, third beat in the length of 3/4. Now in for 5,000 for J.R. Caldwell. At 9-2, horse looks like it can fire fresh. And he's been winning on this angle. I mean, he's been having horses that seem like they've been running at a little. Now, that was the state bred, you know, those were state bred races against Oklahoma bred, but it looked like a little bit a notch, if not equal to, just a touch better than the $5,000 level. And off of this, it's a little bit of layoff. The Caldwell runners are just ready. 9-2, I think, is a great price to kick off a pick six.
And certainly using now, mind you, and also Asmussen with young Phillip, 7-2 favorite. I was shocked when I saw that Nime, the Mexican bred for Crash Craddock, was 20-1. And absolutely has got some races that figure in here. And even if you don't want to use them as part of the pick six, be advised that this one will be picking up the pieces late and might be a very good tri-key horse, you know, in third. But 20-1 is very attractive on Nime, if that's the way we pronounce it.
I say Nim. I've always said Nim. But, okay. The horse loves the track, like Sam Houston, that's for sure.
Yeah, I just not so bad, and of course for those of you that are you know into current events, Insurrection 4-1, and second leg is a maiden special weight, and I ended up with got a couple of surprise horses in here. Drive Happy is the 2-1 favorite, and I might be on his way to being a career maiden, frankly. Vegas Guy, 7-2 for Diodoro. I thought, though, that you have to look at Gumbo, the Asmussen Firster, and the Fincher Firster. Big Mac Daddy, both 10-1.
Yeah, we're looking at first time starters. I actually went to the 9, Whitaker. I thought Whitaker really signaled something on October 3rd, that workout at Remington. I mean, a bullet, best of 88, 46-2, and then it looks like all the work's kind of slowed down after that for Danny Fish, and those just look like we figured out what we got. Now let's just kind of patiently get the horse ready for the race, and a 3-year-old colt by Elusive Quality. It shows that he can win first time out. Red Lane Thoroughbreds had a very nice weekend last year during the Houston Racing Festival, and it's the first time starter that's got an outside post. And I think you're going to get all of that 8-1. I think there's some value in there. I wasn't sure about Vegas Guy and Burns the Boss. The only thing I didn't like was he's a bomb. Didn't really come back and run in a real big race last time in that maiden event. I thought he's a bomb would run a little bit better than that last out. So I kind of am playing against that race. But it does look like the first-time starters are promising. You know, you get the 4 in Gumbo, and then you get the 7 in Big Mac Daddy. I'd probably like the 7 over the 4, the 3-year-old colt by Violence. Fincher's had a really solid beat to start. You know, he's 11 runners, 5 winners. He's doing well. Looks like the horse has been just kind of slowly working up for the race, but I'm going to go take a shot there with the 9 Whitaker.
All right, third leg. I needed your help. I thought the seventh and the eighth were very, very deep and very difficult.
Yep, this is at 6 furlongs, state bred. When you start getting these races, you start trying to figure out an angle that you can play. I went with the 9 Full Trigger here in this race. The horse has run fresh twice and has been impressive both times off the bench. Third beaten 2 3/4. And then a maiden special weight at the state bred level, 1 by 10.5 lengths. I don't know really what happened last time. It says dueled and stopped at Lone Star. I think with the time off, they take the blinkers off. Sophie Doyle gets the board outside post. Let's go with the 9 Full Trigger.
Well, and Full Trigger may have an edge when we look at the pace too, right?
I mean, if the horse runs back to that Lone Star June 29th, this horse should win. Right?
I agree.
Should win pretty handily. Cattle Fox had a lot of trouble in that race. Is 2-1 on the morning line, finishing behind Algebra. I mean, it was a bad trip. The trip notes say save ground, save second best and whatnot, but Cattle Fox had a really bad trip that day and then finally got some room and then came running. but your value is gone. I mean, 2-1 on a horse that had trouble, and you're assuming that the horse, you know, with a better trip was going to win, and looks like is going to be a shorter price than my top selection. I have to play against there. I can't be on board at 2-1.
All right. Full trigger, 4-1, the 9 horse, and very quickly, I thought the allowance feature, the mile turf race, hat tip, 3-1. But I've got an interest in the 1, Wappy, and the 9, Pika, 20-1 and 12-1 respectively. What are you doing in here?
Yeah, I think it's a shot. I actually like the 2, Leather and Lace. I don't think the horse has done anything wrong.
Wow.
She's won 3 times at Sam Houston. She's 3-for-13 at the distance. Cravens and Jimenez team up in here. If I get rid of the dirt race, she loses second by a head in the allowance race. She was in a stakes race before that. She's an Oklahoma bred, you know, and she likes this racetrack. So when you get on the turf course here, good post. I think a 15-1 offers a lot of value. We're both against the 3-1 morning line favorite, it sounds like. This looks like a race that's going to be a price. Good Fight has been visually very impressive in the last 2 starts.
Broberg.
If Broberg's horse runs identical to that last race, then the Good Fight at 4-1 will probably end up being your winner, but we'll see.
The 8th feels like a single with True Friend if you're looking for a backup C play, Princess Shakira.
True Friend, too tough. Numbers are too tough. Looks like this horse is anywhere near the pace when they break out of the gate. Very tough to handle.
And finally, in the nightcap, I like the 5 and the 4, and I'm not sure I need the 2, Mule Skinner, but the 5, 6-1, Crow Mountain for Pish, and Malibumi as well, 5-4 for me in the nightcap.
Yep, a lot of people like those same horses that you've talked about. I'm going to go back to Wicked City. Wicked City, like 7 furlongs, 1 by 12.5 lengths, gets back to 7 furlongs this evening. Floyd Wathy Jr., I think, gets a little bit of a breather now, doesn't have to run 5.5 furlongs. There's a return winner out of that last race, so why not 15-1 to close things out on a Thursday? There's one other note I want to pass along to you before we close out. There's an early pick 5 on Sunday. Just keep that in mind, that we added an early pick 5, 12% takeout. So if there's a carryover in that early pick 5, that'll carry right into the late pick 5 on Sunday as well. So keep that in mind, those bettors out there. Early P5 and a late P5 on Sunday.
Tremendous coverage from Sam Houston Race Park for the weekend. All kinds of people contributing and helping you get involved. Chris, looking forward to the next 4 days. Best of luck. We'll talk next week and recap it. I want to thank Chris Griffin and Steve Haskin, Dick Powell with HKJC, and Charlie Hayward. First of our conversations about the tote system, about ADW, about computer wagering, and more. Talk to you in the morning.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.